when I was in grad school, the way my training records were stored was essentially on paper. And I visited another university where I was in an engineering department, and their students carried around little business cards with hole punches that says, yes, I was trained on this extremely dangerous, hazardous gas. You know, that can maybe work if everyone's there every day. But when you start to decentralize this, and maybe someone's coming in as a visiting professor or a visiting researcher, all of this has to move online. And that has actually started to happen.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones, sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast. I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I'm here with my co-host, Brad Garner. Hi, Brad.
Hey, glad to be here.
This is part two. We're here with Brandon Aubey. Hi, Brandon.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Yeah, let's get started.
Well, now, if you have hot desks in an office, maybe if you have one desk book, you can't book the two beside it.
Oh, my.
And so all of these really complex rules we've put into place to manage these, what we thought were super complex scientific workflows that pharma companies are using and core facilities are using, now offices are coming to us with these exact same requirements. And they say, okay, this requirement I have, it's really weird and complex. I don't know if you guys can do it. And we say, actually, our system is built to do it. And that's given us a lot of new opportunities that when we originally started this company, we're not in the roadmap at all. But of course, we're going after them as well.
It's sad that it makes me think of this, but right before COVID happened, when we were in the office, we have an open concept work environment. And it was new for us. So we didn't have designated rooms yet for Zoom calls. And every once in a while, one of us would be on a webinar in the midst of a presentation. And we'd basically stand up and tell everybody else in their cubicles in the room, hey, I'm getting ready to present. Everybody needs to be quiet or go two doors down. Okay. That's what it reminds me of in terms of blocking off space and, you know, manually, if you will, taking control of the environment.
Yeah. It's really interesting how much control is required and how all of these different situations pop up. And I think what's kind of funny as well is serendipitously, the people who work on our team have become experts in how to solve these problems. And so I remember we had one lab come to us and they had this big list of what sounded like really complex requirements. And we were able to talk them through simplifying the requirements and then using QReserve to help solve it. But just having seen this done in so many places, it often turns out that the underlying mechanics or logic that someone's trying to put in place can be the exact same, just with different labels. So it might be a microtome or a microscope or a Zoom meeting room, but it's really the same underlying work that has to get done. And that's something that we built the system to do.
Well, it sounds like another thread that kind of runs through all of your stories is one of being inquisitive and trying to find ways to connect things or solve issues that arise?
Yeah, one of the ways we built QReserve is we kind of follow the problems. So we are not a VC-invested company. We've actually bootstrapped our way here for the past 6.5 years. And the way we've done it is people will come to us and say, you can solve A, B, and C for us, but now we have this really weird X problem. And we'll look at it and find out, you know what, if you have that problem, we know like 100 other labs that probably have that exact same problem. So how about you pay us to fix that for you? And then we can go around and sell it to these other 100 labs as well. And everyone's okay with that because they get what they need. And then we also improve and grow our product. Now, like I said before, it reaches a point where you can't just do everything for everyone and you have to be careful on where you go. But at the same time, it's been really interesting to see, like I was saying before, how there's so many parallel threads of issues that people have across different verticals and types of businesses or facilities. And so that's really how the platform has evolved to where it is today.
Amazing.
Now, how has COVID changed perhaps the work that you do and the interactions that you have with the different universities or businesses?
It's interesting, actually. One of the things that we can do at QReserve is we can easily see what the activity looks like every day. And so if you go back to March, worldwide, the number of reservations every day, it just plummeted and it was flat for like several weeks. And then it started to go back up again. One thing that's really changed for us is that places that never thought they needed something like Queue Reserve suddenly need it very quickly. Mm. And to give you an example, it's not uncommon that a tool in a small lab, the way you book it is you write your name on a piece of paper next to it with a time saying when you want to use that tool. And that's fine for a small lab, but if you're not supposed to be there except when you're using something, suddenly you need something online. And then also there's the more complex requirements, like maybe you can't use a microscope beside that one because someone's using it. Or a big one that has come up is we have a lab with maybe 15 pieces of equipment, but we can only have 3 people in that lab at once. So we don't care which 3 pieces of equipment are being used, but only 3 mm-hmm. can be at once. And then people love to throw, you know, more complex things in there, like, oh, unless it's that one gets priority. Or unless it's this person, that person gets priority. And so you can see how this quickly grows. But at the same time, that's exactly what we've set out to solve. Wow. And one of our goals is really not to annoy people. And I just say that because all these complex rules, it sounds like, you know, if I'm a student trying to get my thesis work done and I go on to Queue Reserve to book something and it's just like, no, you can't do that. I could get annoyed sometimes, but one of the things we've built is we want to make it very clear, like, this is why you can't use it. These are the rules in place. Go talk to your professor, right? Like at some point it's going to be a decision that someone's made, but we want to make it so that they don't get annoyed when they show up and it turns out they can't get into the room, mm-hmm. which is even more annoying than being at home, not being able to book something. And that's been a really core focus of us.
Fascinating.
So what is next for Queue Reserve?
What is next for Queue Reserve? So many things. One of the big things this year has been evolving out the platform to meet these other needs. So when you work with research facilities, they have specific needs. But as we start to get into other types of verticals, like offices, fitness centers, and gyms are actually one that's coming up for us more and more. They have different needs. So it's building out, I'd say, the look and feel and the user experience to be comfortable in these different situations. One of the things that we actually changed this year was the language in the application itself. So words that were more sciencey or research focused are now being more generalized. And as a result, you know, we can go after a lot of different markets. And because we're an online company, even though we're based here in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, we can work with anyone in the world. And so 2021, our goal is really just to grow globally and to go after all these different markets that have opened up to us. One of our hardest roadblocks in growth was simply getting people to know about us. And so we've had the, I'd say, pleasure and curse of having a really nice organic growth where a lot of our new clientele come from referrals. And that's great because they come in already essentially having trust in us, right? Because their colleagues said, you should check out Queue Reserve. But then they will say something to us like, but I wish I knew about you 3 months ago when I started this journey looking for a software platform. And so our goal right now is really just to grow and get the word out there that Queue Reserve exists and that we are really awesome and we have an awesome team that can help support people.
Well, I think, Brad, what was the last number? 1 billion people that listen to this podcast?
It's actually 1.5 billion now.
Okay. So we are definitely getting the word out there with this podcast. That's for sure.
Fantastic.
Brad and I have been pretty committed to asking a question on this podcast, maybe in the last year, about projections for higher ed, because we're convinced that a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, some of those projections are going to come true. And then we, in partnership with our guests, are going to take credit for all the projections that have been made. So
yes, you heard it here first, right?
Yes, heard it here first. That's the goal. So if we have enough projections, some of them have to stick. So what kind of projections do you have based on your unique experience with research and software do you have for higher ed?
A common thread, I think, like even from when I was in grad school, is this concept of decentralizing everything And this year has really accelerated that in multiple ways. But just to give you an example, I think a common kind of perception of a scientist who works at a university is they have a lab and they go to work in their lab, they close the door, they do their experiments and they publish their papers and they go on. But in reality, doors and walls are falling down very quickly, and collaboration with colleagues, both within a facility, within a university, is growing very quickly, and across universities, across companies, across countries. One of the things that we actually had experienced when I was working after my grad school was we would do collaborations with people in different countries. So like say Germany. And because we're doing work with someone so far away, you need proper tools to have that collaboration be easy. And so that involves things like booking time for experiments, but also sharing data, sharing information, communication. And with something like COVID now, and I think I don't have to live next to a university to work or go to school at the university, this idea that you have digital tools and online tools to facilitate access to resources is going to become more and more important. So I there's actually one example that I can give you that I saw change before my eyes. I mentioned before training. So training for students and researchers is very important. You have to know how to safely use equipment, safely work in a research facility. And it's extremely important for a university because if someone gets hurt and they weren't properly trained, that's a liability. Well, when I was in grad school, the way my training records were stored was essentially on paper. And I visited another university where I was in an engineering department and their students carried around little business cards with hole punches that says, yes, I was trained on this extremely dangerous, hazardous gas. You know, that can maybe work if everyone's there every day. But when you start to decentralize this and maybe someone's coming in as a visiting professor or a visiting researcher, or maybe you have to show that you have a training record when you're booking something at home or you're collaborating at home, all of this has to move online. And that has actually started to happen. So the school I was at first, they did move to an online system. QReserve, we offer online training record and credential management. But people are expecting that more and more. And the other big push to that is when we're at home, the consumer market has just had a huge push towards online transactions. So like you can book a car, you can order food from your couch on your phone, it shows up on your doorstep. That's just normal life to us now. There's nothing insightful there. But when you get to school, when you get to the research lab, to have an antiquated system makes less and less sense. And so as the next generation starts to fill these new researcher roles, they end up going to grad school, postdocs, and so on. Why can't they collaborate with their thesis from their phone, from home, from the couch? And I think that's really where things are going. And these large institutions, like any large organization, you're going to be slower to adopt technology, but it has to happen. And the push is going to come from the next generation coming in who just expects it. It's just normal. And it's not like it's a hard problem to solve. Like you just have to do it. So I think that's really where the future is going. People are upgrading. They're seeing the benefits of it. And also technology is maturing enough that it's easier to deploy. One of the hard things at universities before is you're a big organization, enterprise management systems that are like multi-million dollar implementations. The software costs a lot. You have a team of 100 consultants who come in and do change management and all that. Well, like as a person, I just go to the app store and download an app and I can do it. And I think that shift for how people access technology, how technology is built, developed, and deployed is going to start influencing universities, higher ed, and research more and more often, just because it's becoming normal and there's less and less excuse not to go in that direction.
Brandon, it has been fascinating to have you on the podcast today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
We haven't had anyone on here quite like you, from the get to know you questions to the focus on research labs and management. It's great. I love that you have a unique place on the podcast.
I will try to take that as a compliment.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, we've been doing this for a year and a half, I think. So there's definitely overlap between guest conversations, but this one is very unique and we really enjoyed it a lot.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, great questions.
Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for being with us.
Thanks.
For our listeners, you can access how to connect with Brandon and his resources and his company QReserve on our website, digitaltolearn.com, and that's with a numerical 2. Check it out. Thanks. See you next week.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are 3 things we ask you to do. 1, come back and join us again. 2, tell your friends about us. And 3, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.